Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. We'll have the Rob Rant later this hour at 7:45. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will be with us at 8 o'clock. We will get into the Titans and all things NFL with him, so looking forward to that. Speaking of the Titans, big game against the Colts this weekend. AFC South matchup. I've told you, the Titans are winning this game. Joe, I'm attaching a score to it as well. 24-21 will be the final. Titans will win 24-21 coming up on Sunday. And now,
I love it.
We have some players in Indianapolis just stoking the fire a little bit. Just stoking that fire a little bit to set things up real nicely for a big-time performance from Cam Ward and the Tennessee Titans. Linebacker Zaire Franklin was asked about the touchdown pass that Cam Ward threw on Sunday against the LA Rams. And here's what Franklin had to say about Cam Ward's pass.
I mean, I hope he throws that play again. Like, it wasn't a good throw. But, I mean, he's a talented player. So, you know, like I said, he can make all those throws. His arm angle, obviously, is exceptional. He's got a zip in the ball. Like I said, he's the number one overall pick for a reason. I was a fan of him when he was in college. But, you know, when you know you got a guy like that that's able to make plays, you know, you just got to make sure you stay on your assignments. But hopefully he throws the ball again.
Hopefully he throws it again. Hope he throws that pass again. It wasn't a good throw, he said. Now, I think, Joe, what he meant was it wasn't a good decision. Because it was definitely a good throw, man. I don't know if you can throw the ball a whole lot better than Cam Ward threw that ball on Sunday. But here we are, Zaire Franklin. Talk a little trash about Cam Ward.
Yeah, and I don't want to turn this into, like, just us yell, you know, like total WHMR. But it wasn't a bad decision either.
There's no, but there's no defender on that side of the field.
Exactly. If there was someone, you know, over there who could have, you know, he made an incredible throw, if you remember last year in that Florida game.
Yeah.
Where I think he was drifting left and he just, but that was like, there was like a safety, you know, to the left of the play, like that almost was bad. Like that one, you could say the ooh, incredible throw decision. I don't know. This was to even get to the point of making the decision is pretty remarkable. The throw itself was incredible. The decision was great. I don't understand. Like what is Zaire Franklin? Like, you know, like, I mean, I thought he knew ball. Does he not know ball?
I hope.
How can you love ball if you don't know ball?
I hope the Titans are soaking this in. And I hope there's some nice one-arm push-ups going on this week. Because, look, I'll take all the motivation Indianapolis wants to give, right? Like, if they want to get out there and talk about how the quarterback, they hope he throws the ball. I hope he does, too. Oh, Cam Ward throws for 375 yards on the Colts on Sunday. I mean, give them all the motivation you can give them. I am totally cool with it. So, I feel even better about my pick, Joe, after I heard those comments from Zaire Franklin yesterday. Even better.
Man, I mean, if that's what passes for trash talk, that's actually a pretty disappointing week from the Colts. We may have to send the Titans some Ben and some Jordan from Franklin and other comments from the text line. Maybe that will actually help. I don't know why Indy Ben is. I think he's just afraid. He actually thinks they're gonna. I think Indy Ben thinks the same thing you think.
Well, I hope so. Here's what I don't feel good about: J.C. Latham did not practice on Wednesday with the hip. We'll see what that looks like as the week goes on here. Tavondre Sweat was a limited participant with the ankle and said if it's up to him, he's playing on Sunday. So I guess you could expect to see Tavondre Sweat back in there this week, yeah, which will be good.
Sounds like it.
Because Jonathan Taylor, you know, has been very good to start this season. So, and that's both in the running game, and he's been a factor in the passing game for the Colts as well. So getting Sweat back in there will be a big deal. How about this one? And, you know, Paul Kowarski's put it out there that he doesn't think it's going to be that big of a deal and stop him from playing on Sunday. But L'Jarius Sneed with a back. He's on the injury report. It's not with a knee. Good. It's now with a back. So what do you make of that?
Well, yeah, the first thing I saw the injury report, I'm like, oh, my God, now it's a back. But, yes, Kowarski very – I take the way Kowarski played that down. You know, sometimes you got to read between – you got to read the tea leaves a little bit.
Yeah.
I take that as he got told pretty clearly that Sneed's playing.
Yeah.
That's how I take it. If he doesn't play, then Karski needs to mix up like his tweet tones. But I took that as he's not just guessing like he's going to be fine. But but yeah, still,
let's monitor
yeah,
my back.
I was really hoping you'd play. Ian does not miss. He really does.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
You weren't monitoring your tone very much.
he does not miss. Does not miss. Zeitler also on the injury report with a bicep injury and did not practice on Wednesday. So another thing to monitor. I will feel less good about my pick, Joe, if Kevin Zeitler and JC Latham can't play on Sunday.
Yeah. You know, the underrated struggle here so far to me for the Titans, and whatever you think of those numbers, they do sort of confirm it. Zeitler and Cushenberry have had some rough patches here yep. early. Now, we understand Cushenberry. I didn't think he'd be just starting week one anyway. So
I give him a lot of grace.
A little concerned about Zeitler. I mean, Zeitler's been in this league for freaking ever, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously, like the line, I mean, I have no idea. You know, if you're a guy like that, usually you end up moving on. But still, like, I feel like if the Lions really wanted him and thought he had a lot left in the tank, you know, they could have dealt with that before he got to free agency. A little bit concerned. Also, a biceps yeah. injury. I mean, I guess it's a strain then, right? But those never sound good or, I think, lead to good things either.
No. That's when you're talking about a hip with Latham and a bicep with Zeitler. It's not great. Like, it's not what you want, especially this early into the year. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, we'll see if Zeitler is able to get on the practice field before Friday rolls around. Same thing with Latham here, but hopefully at least one, but hopefully both of those guys will be available on Sunday against the Colts. Like, what? How do you win this game if you're the Titans? I think, number one, you're going to have to run the ball. I thought they ran the ball okay against L.A. Like, you know, Tony Pollard ended up, 4-6 a carry? So, like, he was good in the game. But you're going to have to do it again against Indianapolis. And really, I think what it comes down to, like, can you force a couple turnovers? Like, it's one thing. I know they forced four against the Broncos. They were never going to move the ball in that Broncos defense. And, look, the Colts have a good defense. I think we all would agree that they're not the Denver Broncos on defense. So can you force some turnovers if you're the Titans, steal some possessions that way, and then, like, you gotta punch it in at the end of the day. Like, they're talking all week, Joe, about, I think Jeffrey Simmons said yesterday, they've played 8 quarters of football so far, and 2 of them have been bad. I mean, I guess I would largely agree with that. But the problem is, you can't do that in the NFL. Like, you can't just have a brutal quarter each game in the NFL and expect that you're going to win, particularly when you have this level or this lack of talent that's available to you.
Well, you can't squander opportunities in exactly. your good quarters. That's what they've been doing, too. So even though you could call it, like overall, a good quarter, a lot of things to like, you still, like, if you're gonna mess it up when you have chances to score, then, yeah, the margin for error is way too small for this team.
There is an interesting kind of discussion on Titans Twitter right now about penalties, right? So we know the Titans have taken a ton of penalties the first two games of the year. They took 13 against Denver. They took 10 against L.A. So you talk about a key to a win. Let's try to keep the penalties to, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 against Indianapolis. See if we can't pull that off. That'd be nice to take a step in that direction. But there's, like, a lot of discussion right now, Joe, about penalties and what exactly do they mean? Why are they happening? We talked with Kuharski yesterday about it, and he started talking about, like, you know, a lot of the penalties, he thinks, is just because they don't have any talent. And, you know, you think about the false starts on the offensive line there, and why are they happening so frequently? Why did, you know, John Ajoku on Sunday, was he a big-time offender of that? It's because he's scared to death that he's going to get beat one-on-one in his matchup. I think there's something to that. I did see, and Joe, you sent this in a text to us yesterday, a stat that Justin Mello put out there yep. talking about penalties. And I'll just read the tweet that Mello put out there. Quote, "I don't know how the Titans solved their penalty problem, but I found this fact very interesting. Mike Vrabel's Titans from 2018 to 2021, they were 41-24 overall as a record. Pretty good. And where they ranked during that span, that 4-year span in penalties, 1st, 9th, 11th, and 13th. Did not take a whole lot of penalties. In 2022-2023, they were 13-21 in Vrabel's last 2 years here, and they were 28th and 27th, respectively, in the league in penalties. So you saw a big spike in penalties going up. He said, you know, we should agree Vrabel's one of the best at knowing slash teaching the rules and coaching technique. Yet when he had a bad roster, he couldn't prevent them from committing penalties. Maybe bad players equals more penalties, and good players create penalties. The Titans have a bad rebuilding roster right now. So there's a lot of discussion about that. What do you make of that, that Mello threw out there?
Yeah, and he credited Jay Loma 72 for coming up with that for Titan sized. Well, that's part of, I mean, Karski was saying some of the same things yesterday, and it's very valid. I mean, again, it's like a lot of the things that we have an issue with in the early parts of the Brian Callahan tenure here, two games into year two, are the same things that were issues at the end of the Vrabel tenure, right? So some of that is like years and years of screwing up picking offensive linemen, right? Yep. They both dealt with that. But I think there's definitely a lot to that, to the overall numbers being attributed to just you get beat. You get beat downfield. You get beat trying to protect your quarterback. You know, you get beat here or there, and then you have to commit more penalties to try to, excuse me, equalize it. I also would say, hey, this is where, again, watching it and context are important, because if you're going to make a huge deal out of it, which he did, which, again, I understand why you would. Like, you need this to change. And then you have so many operational and pre-snap penalties that aren't, most of them aren't related to that. I suppose you could say like a jump because you know you're going to get smoked in pass pro. I guess that could fall into the category, but I still say any sort of pre-snap movement, mess up, you know, illegal formation, that's just sloppiness.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, like, I hear that from Mello, and I think it makes sense, like, in terms of the overall discussion point. And then I look at the list last year of, like, the most penalized teams in the NFL, and it's like, well, the Jets were number one. That adds up. They're 5-12. Titans were number two. That adds up. They're 3-14. Oh, the Baltimore Ravens are number three. They actually tied with the Titans with 132 penalties taken last year. And it's like, well, Baltimore's 12-5 have probably at worst, what, the third, fourth best roster in the NFL last year? And yet here they are taking all these penalties. Like, the Seahawks had the sixth most penalties in the league last year. They were 10-7. The Texans tied with the Seahawks for six. They were 10-7. So it's like, I don't know that it's a direct correlation to talent, right, when you look at the actual numbers as it relates to penalties and win-loss record and all that.
Yeah, so then it's like, what kind of penalty? So, I mean, a Ravens fan might be like, yeah, we were such a mess, we should have been 15-2.
Right.
But, you know, this, I mean, yeah, no, you're never going to have it's just all the least penalized are at the top of the work. I would say over time, there's probably some correlation, or right, like probably more good teams are,
I would say so,
and low, and more bad teams are high, but yeah, it's never the numbers never exactly feed you the narrative you're looking for. So I think it's a very valid point. Like, all of these issues, you have to trace them. You can't like avoid talking about how bad the players are, right, when you talk about the Titans and their struggles. Like, it's always part of it. You can't divorce coaching from that completely and just say Callahan's just totally screwing everything up.
We'll take your thoughts on the Titans and the Colts coming up on Sunday. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, plus the Nashville Predators opening up training camp today. We'll get into that later this hour. The Rob rant coming up as well. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. This Sunday, the NFL game of the week on 94.9 The Fan is the Cowboys taking on the Bears at 3:25. NFL game of the week presented by Circa Sportsbook Kentucky and Macero in 12 South. We'll have the Rob rant coming up at 7:45. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will be with us at 8 o'clock, so looking forward to that. Joe, the Titans and the Colts coming up this Sunday. And by the way, if you're going to the game, stop by John Bon Jovi's before you head to Nissan Stadium. Join us for the pregame show with Big Joe, Derek Mason, and Chris Sanders from 9:30 to 11:30. Pregame show brought to you by Parman Tractor and Equipment, Old National Bank, Circa Sportsbook Kentucky, and Tennessee Brew Works. Joe, as PK said yesterday, you're looking at the schedule, and I realize Indianapolis is 2-0. And there's, like, if you want to make the argument, Yeah, everybody's looking at the Titans right now and just chalking up a win. That's fine. I can't argue that. So that's cool. If you're the Titans looking at it and you're looking for a win, like an opportunity to win a game, this to me feels like the big opportunity, right? Like you got a divisional rival at home. I understand that they're off to an incredible start. And maybe that's just what they are, you know? Maybe Shane Steichen is going to win Coach of the Year, and Daniel Jones is going to end up being the long-term quarterback for Indianapolis. I still have my doubts. Like, I need to see more of it before I'm a true believer that this is what the Colts just all of a sudden are. So we'll see. We'll see if that happens this Sunday. But, like, if you're the Titans, an opportunity here. Like, I think Brian Callahan earlier this week, Joe, got asked about, like, basically desperation for a win. And, like, do you already have that? And he was like, yeah. Like, we got desperation for a win every week. They've lost 8 in a row dating back to last year. And we can go through the numbers over the last 2 years, last 3 years. They're the worst team in the league during that stretch. So, like, to me, you know, we talk about finishing games. And I think a lot of times the inability to finish those games does come down to what we talked about, and that is you're just not as talented as the other team. And when you have the more reps that build up in a game, the more that talent discrepancy becomes evident, and the more likely it is you're going to lose those games. Like, to me, I would be very disappointed if the Titans don't have a real chance to win this game late in the fourth quarter. Like, that to me, you know, I picked them to win. I truly believe they're going to win. But I would be very disappointed if, you know, we're heading into the fourth quarter on Sunday and they're down by 2 scores. Like, to me, this is it. Like, you got to go out there and put together a performance worthy of winning a football game. When's the last time they won a freaking game at Nissan Stadium? New England last year?
Is that right? I think that is right.
I think it's the only one they won at Nissan Stadium last year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, this is critical. And I really do, as much as I'll make fun of it, probably pick against it and make sure to bring it up all the time if you're wrong. Yeah. I do think that you're onto something for sure in terms of, you know, especially from the Colts perspective, like not having punted in 2 weeks, for example. Like, that's in the NFL, that precedes, like, you punt on your first 6 possessions of the next game, right?
It's too good to be true. Yeah.
Yeah, and Daniel Jones, you know, it's good for him. And look, I mean, the guy did lead the Giants to, what, 10-win season and won a playoff game on the road. So it's not like he's never played any good football. It's just that he just isn't consistently good enough. And I think that'll end up bearing out, I think, again, or maybe he's one of these great reclamation stories. But I just feel like, there's going to be, even if that's the case, there's going to be ups and downs. And it's not like the Titans are the best team to provide a down, but they are desperate. They are home. And you just feel like this league, the way this league goes, it does set up pretty well for the Titans. They may be bad enough that it doesn't matter, but it sets up pretty well.
Yeah. Like, it's, if you don't win Sunday, all of a sudden you get to 0-3. And Joe, you look at that schedule, and it's like, well, you're going to Houston on the road, and I know you went to Houston on the road last year and won the game, but you're going to Houston on the road with pass rushers that just feel like they will give the Titans absolute fits, right? Like, it just feels like that's going to be a big problem for the Titans. I'm not scared of the Arizona Cardinals, but they are 2-0, and it's going out there. Like, they're coming up. You don't win this game, and you start to look at the schedule and, like, I mean, this is going to be – I mean, they're going to be – we talk about playing meaningful football games in late November. Remember that conversation before the season? Like, can you get to some meaningful games in the month of November? You lose this game Sunday, that's becoming way, way, way less of a likelihood that that's going to happen. And you just – like, at some point, you gotta find a way – whatever this team's best performance is, and I don't know how good it is, but whatever it is, we need to see it on Sunday. You got to find a way to put it together this week.
Yeah, look, they could be not too far into October and have lost relevance, which is a scary thought. But
it's hard doing the NFL. I mean,
It is. And again, we did talk about the schedule, and it would be better for them, probably, or give them a little bit better chance if you could flip flop it or mix it up a little bit, but it's just how the schedule broke. And again, like if you want to be an optimist, the first two teams I think are really good, although Denver is not playing well. So Denver right now looks like they might end up being one of those overrated preseason teams. However, I still think two very talented teams, especially two very tough teams to deal with in terms of their pass rush. So, there were good stretches. Like, I don't think Simmons is wrong what he said there. Six good quarters of football. That 25% is still not great. You can easily lose with that. And again, like you have to be able to capitalize on things. So I think they need a couple big plays. Like you said, turnovers, of course, but some chunk plays too on offense. I think they need to,
Ridley.
they get back.
This is a
Yeah,
Ridley game.
Ridley. Yeah, it's time for him to have it. So we're not talking about drops after every performance, and we're talking about, him making some big plays, and that's there for him. Aya Manor is coming. I mean, the running the ball is going pretty well. The defense is, you get back to kind of having to cage rush a quarterback. Maybe that's better for the Titans because it's like just keep them in there as opposed to you need to get to him because they obviously struggle to do that.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. The Nashville Predators opening up training camp today, the beginning of a new season. A thought I've got on things that I haven't heard heading into this year, and we'll get your thoughts on the Predators, your expectations for this season. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. DVD with Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vinken will be broadcasting live at the all-new Circa Sportsbook Kentucky in the Mint Gaming Hall this Monday prior to the Monday Night Football game. Head up there to watch the Lions and Ravens, plus ask about Circa's giveaway of a trip to Las Vegas for the Titans and the Raiders game that's coming up in October. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Joe, the Nashville Predators opening up camp today, I guess technically yesterday, but they're on the ice today for training camp. And I was thinking about this on the way into work this morning. Last year, obviously you had the exciting summer. We don't need to relive it. We know who they signed, but it is an exciting time around here. And people were like waiting with bated breath for Preds training camp. They were like, all right, let's go. It's time to play some hockey around here. And we all know how the season went, and it didn't work out well. I feel almost no buzz for the Predators right now. And I understand why. I'm not saying that it's surprising. But I do think it underscores an important point. And I heard Willie and Adam talking about this yesterday, and I think they're on to it. Like, it is so crucial for them this year to start fast. They've started really slow the last couple years. Pretty slow in year one under Brunette, awful last year in year two. And that if that happens again, first off, the noise is going to get incredibly loud on Brunette just immediately if that happens again. But like, I also think internally in that room, like, you don't want your confidence to just fall right from the jump. It would be really nice if they got off to a semi-decent start this year out there and just avoided total disaster like they've had the last 2 years. They were able to overcome it the first year. They didn't come close to overcoming that last year.
Yeah, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? David from Paris says, great, another team to totally let us down. More underperforming players and coach talk. It's too much. Yes. Yes, I know, David. It is
we'll see.
Someone needs to change it up. The Titans weren't able to do that with the first two games, which is kind of like what? The first 10 games of a hockey season.
Yeah.
But very tough start. If it continues in the same path, yeah, like that's the thing last year. I guess there was also still at this time last year when camp started, we didn't know what the Titans, right? We didn't know for sure,
sure,
yet. Like that Will Levis, I mean, it was pretty rough right away, but still, like, there was a lot of season left. But then there was this excitement, and now it's like total resignation with the Titans, and like you said, lack of buzz with the Preds.
Yeah. Well, like, I may talk to them about this throughout camp here, because I think like the psychology here is really interesting. Last year, basically, Joe, everybody was telling them how great they were going to be. Like, it was like, wow, you guys are going to be really good. And Brunette talked about that as the season went on, about how they just didn't handle that very well. and he was not, you know, there's just a lot of things that went on throughout the year that expectations they put on that were just so high, and they didn't handle it well. And I understand if you're a fan, you hear that, and you're like, well, yeah, why don't you grow up and be able to handle some expectations a little bit? I get it.
Especially when you're this old.
Right. Like, right? I get it. Yeah. So I understand that part of it. It's going to be the exact opposite this year. Everybody thinks they suck. Everybody. You're going to go through the predictions at the beginning of the year, and I would be surprised if you find anybody who picks them to make the playoffs. So, like, is that at all a factor? Like, you know, you still look at their roster, and it's like, well, you know, Forsberg bounces back, Yossi bounces back, Saros, probably more important than anybody, bounces back. You got a shot to hang around and be maybe a playoff team at the end of it. I don't know if anybody's going to go crazy and be like, this is a cup contender, because you look immediately at center ice and you're like, oh boy, that's just not very good. So I get that part of it, but it's going to be the exact opposite this year. Like, everybody is going to pick them to be one of the worst teams in the league.
Yeah, so if you're a coach, you would always pick that. You would always prefer this, right? Have something you can say to them, and they, man, I hope this individually pisses a lot of guys off, you know, and does something for them. So maybe that'll be good. I just, the whole handling expectations last year, that's to me something you worry about with a really young, loaded team.
Yeah.
That hasn't experienced success or gone through all the ups and downs. And the Preds have multiple cup winners, and they have even their own veterans have been to within two wins of a cup, and they've been on good teams, on bad teams. Like, that just, I have a hard time buying it. That was some big problem.
Well, I think I even asked Brunette at one point last year. It was like, well, I mean, most of these guys have been on teams where they've had high expectations before, right? And have won. Like, you know, Tampa, after they won the Stanley Cup, I guarantee you they had some high expectations next year. And I think Stamkos probably handled that pretty well, right? Like, Marchessault, yeah. The expectations are outrageous in Vegas. And they handled it pretty well. And it's not just those two. Like even homegrown guys, right? Like, hey, Roman Yossi and Philip Forsberg have been on teams before where the expectations are pretty freaking high, and they've handled it well, right?
The 17-18 team, yeah. I mean, they go win the President's Trophy. You know, you lose in the playoffs. But, yes, handled it great. Built on a surprising cup run to kind of validate it,
yeah.
You know? I mean, that's hard to do. So, yeah, it's just – but maybe – look, at this point, it's like – grasp for anything that could possibly help these guys.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I'll be shocked if I see anybody who covers the league who picks them to go to the playoffs. Yeah. I think that Brunette would, and I think on the whole, like, who's the coach in the hottest seat? I doubt he'll be lower than like third on any of those lists.
Yeah. Like, I'm, again, it's why it's so important they cannot afford to get off to a bad start. Like, if they get off to a bad start, the noise is going to be so loud on him. And I think especially early in the season, Joe, we're going to be looking through such a microscope with them in terms of, like, Saros. Like if Saros has a bad game to start the year, we're going to be like, oh my gosh. Like, is he ever going to be a good goalie ever again? Like, there's so much, I think, that people are just waiting on with this group to just reinforce the idea that they think that they suck. Like, there's a lot of, like, yeah. You know, and Marchessault said this, and he said a lot of things at the end of his season media availability last year, which we talked about ad nauseum. But one of the things he did say was, like, yeah, everybody's going to think we're going to be awful next year. And one of the things I'm interested in seeing is, how do they handle that? Now, the mentality part of it, I think it's important. I do think that only takes you so far in professional sports, Joe. So let's say they've got that right mentality. They've got a chip on their shoulder. They want to go prove people wrong, all these things. All that's great. I think that's valuable. Are they equipped from a roster standpoint to do it? It's a big, like, when you look at their roster, number one, and everybody's going to be wondering, like, is Brady Martin going to make the team? We'll see. I kind of have my doubts, but we'll see what that looks like to start the year. And if not, like, there's so much riding with this team on Svechkov. So much. Because if he's just like a little bit better than he was last year, well, you look at their center ice depth and it's like, well, you got Svechkov, You got Eric Halla, who they brought in. You got Michael McCarron. You got Ryan O'Reilly. And I love Ryan O'Reilly. You know, Ryan O'Reilly, Alex Doherty sent me a text message. It was funny the other day. Like, he's always out there working his game at all times. Like, he's just always on the ice. But Ryan O'Reilly at his age, and I think Barry Trotz would agree with this, like, by now, you probably want him downshifting in the lineup, and they just don't have anybody to do it right now.
And you can't. Yeah. I mean, that was the stated goal the day they signed him, and here we are, and you just can't do it, which is a big problem. I almost feel like, for all the guys, obviously, like you said, they have a lot of guys who have done a lot of great things in this league, and you want better seasons out of several of them, but I almost feel like it's like young players coming up early and showing clear improvement, I think, would be the thing that would probably get people most excited. Right? You got to have some hope with some guys. Like, I mean, Svechko obviously is huge. Dennis asking about Evangelista. There's a guy who, you know, to me, it's like we thought there'd be a step last year, and it was the wrong way.
Well, and
so where's that go?
Is he signing a contract? Like,
and is he signing a contract?
You know, there's, you know, it's a somewhat similar situation to Tomasino last year, and I think he may have signed like the day before camp last year or something like that. And then, of course, we know what happened. He gets shipped off. Like, Evangelista, all the reporting around it is, I mean, it's not been very good in terms of the negotiation. Like, they're pretty far apart. So, I mean, look, it's hockey. That could change quickly. Like, he may sign in an hour. So, it can change pretty quickly. But I don't think he's got a whole lot of leverage. Like, he was not very good last year, and he's a restricted free agent. So I understand the cap's going up. I have no idea specifically what Evangelista's looking for. But, like, I see a lot of Predators fans, first off, like, freaking out about this. And I'm like, well, right now Evangelista is a replaceable NHL player. I think he can be more than that. I hope he is more than that. But right now, like, it's a huge year for him. Let's say they get the contract worked out. And I don't think it's going to be a very long-term deal. But let's say they get it worked out. Like, it's a huge year for him to prove that he belongs in this lineup.
Yeah, I mean, by far the best case for them is that they figure that out. It's reasonable because, yes, he can't have that much leverage other than the leverage is look at, you know, what, you know, look at your lineup and, like, you know, like, they need him. To me, they need him to sign. They need him to bounce back and kind of continue his 23-24 progress. That's by far best case. You know, because, yeah, they've got some guys coming up, but, like, you got to have one of these guys work out at some point, at least to a reasonable extent. I guess I've always just thought they'll figure it out, yep, right before camp. But I will be interested to see what it is, and he's, to me, really important this year. Guys like that, but he's just one, there aren't that many guys that, to me, the young guys who have the upside he has right now.
Well, and by the way, we've gone through all of that. Like, there's a lot of storylines with this team heading into camp. We've gone through everything we just talked about. They got two new guys coming in on defense, so what does that look like? How much better defensively are they going to be? And then a huge one that I have no way of answering right now, and I don't think anybody does. I don't know if the Predators do. What's Roman Josi going to look like this year? How available is he going to be? I mean, first off, he's 35. So you got that part of it anyway. Like, is he still capable of being the same type of player that he's been at his age? And then you throw in on top of it the POTS diagnosis that he had this summer. And he's, from everything I've heard, doing great, and he's in great shape. And I hope that that's the case throughout the whole thing. But what does that look like as the season goes on? How do they manage that?
Yeah, I mean, it's you have to be concerned. And, you know, again, the worst-case scenario, which obviously involves him just diminishing slash not being able to give you as much as you hoped. I mean, the worst – there's a lot of guys, you know, these older guys who we could start going the wrong way. And, of course, as someone said in the YouTube chat, you know, it's like Saros. Like,
yeah.
What, is Saros done having – I mean, like – everything still revolves around also him being like Vezina level here for the next few years, right?
Right.
And obviously not close to that. I mean, he's – and then, you know, you get into like, are they helping him more this year? Of course that's important, but I still think there's a lot that's just squarely on him.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll have the Rob Rant coming up next. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will be with us at 8 o'clock. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
We need this team to win.
You know, it's kind of like being half pregnant. You know, forget that. We're all in.
Yeah, I think Rex Ryan in any foot story probably would fly.
We're fully pregnant now.
They think you're some buffoon.
Did I talk to Michael?
Micah.
You got the gout, man. It's just there.
I'm not going anywhere.
Why can't he close the man door? Let's go win some football games. Come on.
We're vibing, Robbie. We're vibing, Robbie.
It is that time of the day. The Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Rise up to better health. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. Joe, today I do something I rarely do, and that is give the NFL credit at the expense of college football. So ooh. I'm watching Tennessee and Georgia on Saturday with amongst other college football games. And I'm thinking to myself, all right, there's another touchdown. That's great. Here comes a kickoff. Well, that kickoff's going out of the back of the end zone. They're going to start on the 25. Well, there's Georgia. Yeah, kickoff, but that's going off the back of the end zone. You might as well just take the ball in college football most of the time when you're talking about the high-level teams and just place that sucker right at the 25-yard line, because they're either kicking it through the back of the end zone or they're kicking it so high in the air that the team's calling a fair catch and they're starting at the 25 anyway. And then on Sunday, you watch the NFL, and with all the tweaks and the changes they've made to the kickoff, including now if you kick a touchback, you're starting at the 35, there's kickoff returns all over the place. The kickoff return is back in the NFL. And I was curious, Joe, to see what the numbers looked like. And luckily, our friends at The Athletic have put some numbers together. So through the first 2 weeks, let's just start from last year. So last year, you know, they had the dynamic kickoff because they realized that the kickoff had become completely obsolete in the National Football League. And it was an uptick last year, but it was still only 32.8% of kickoffs that were returned last year. So while that was better than, you know, basically, I think the number before that was like 10 or something. It was crazy low. It was 32.8% of kickoffs returned a year ago. To me, like, that's still not enough. You're still talking about more than half the time on a kickoff. There's no return involved whatsoever. It's only 2 weeks to this point, Joe, so we'll see how this continues throughout the NFL season. But after 2 weeks in the NFL, 76.9% of kickoffs have been returned. 256 out of 333. That is a major jump. A major jump from 32.8% last year to 76.9% through the first 2 weeks. The kickoff is fun again. The kickoff is an actual football play again. And I would urge college football, as they're trying to figure out all these other things, there's so much about college football that I love. The game, the flow of it, the way that it plays, it's just awesome. But we got to do something about the kickoff in college football. It's totally obsolete. It's totally boring. And this is an instance where they could learn from the National Football League.
Well, I think it's a great point. And also, this is where sometimes it's like, it makes me think last year of something stupid, but it kind of goes to the mindset, which is, you know, that this don't say 2 minute warning, you know, now that you have a 2 minute warning in college football, it's a 2 minute timeout. Like all the, you know, all the announcing crews were informed and it became this big joke. Like, oh yeah, we can't say 2 minute warning. If you're college football, everything doesn't need to be exactly the same. And I think college football has the superior overtime, at least, you know, the starting from the 25.
Yeah.
And they've done some weird stuff with that too. Like we talk about player safety. That's the reason the NFL changed, is because the most dangerous play in football has been, and really is, the, you get the 40 yards of running start and you got two people going that fast, you know, some of the biggest, strongest, fastest people in the world going that fast, going opposite directions. So they've tweaked it so you don't have that running start. And then, like you said, they figured out this year how to make it so that there are returns and it's good. Why would college football not automatically go to a safer model anyway?
Yeah.
Right? Like just do it. Like there's this, You know, and I think it's like sometimes maybe it's in the coaching ranks, like the coach association, you know, this resistance to doing that. To me, college basketball and college football both, like, you should be as much like the pro version of your game as you can. Like, go to the 24-second clock in college basketball. I mean, I mean to me, like, everybody wants to go to that league, right? So why not adopt things that make sense, at least? You know, I mean, college football still has a, like, it's still illegal to like pull a player, right? Technically, yep. Whereas in the NFL now, you can just everybody put Jalen Hurts up like it's a, you know, like it's a wedding, and you're putting like groom on a chair, and he's like, hey, I'll carry him to the goal line, you know?
Yeah, but I don't want to see that college football.
Yeah, college football for sure. This is a no brainer that should happen like right now. Should happen yesterday.
Yeah, I was pretty stunned by the number that it shot from the low 30s to 76.9% in the NFL. Again, it's 2 weeks sample size, but I mean, I think that even if it doesn't stay at that number, that level, it tells you throughout the course of the season, Joe, that it's going to be a pretty high number of kickoffs to get returned. Because look, it makes sense. People look at it and they're like, yeah, I think I'll take my chances making a tackle than you just automatically starting on the 35-yard line. Like, you know, I'll take my chance.
As far as viewership goes, I think it's working for me. Like, I've noticed, especially after the first week, you used to, you know, that was your chance to get up from the TV and kind of walk away.
Now that was a commercial, basically.
Yeah, you get up and walk away, and you feel like you missed something. You might actually feel like you missed an important play.
Right.
You know, it's one of those things where you do feel like you're going to miss something, and it could switch something really quick, and you'll miss, you know, all of a sudden you're in field goal range or something.
I mean, heck, even the Titans have made a big play on this sucker this year through 2 weeks. I mean, it's unbelievable. If they can do that, it's working great for the league. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will join us coming up next. We will get into all things NFL with him. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.